number one.
From the number one college town in the Big 12. Big 12. We're back with the Purple Project Podcast with Eddie Greer.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, it is officially game week. We made it this far. Eddie Greer III here for the Purple Project Podcast. Here, episode 19, I live in Manhattan, Kansas, where we talk, as usual, about K-State athletics and what's going on sometimes around the community. Once again, episode 19, Purple Project Podcast, college football has officially started, ladies and gentlemen. Man, it was great to see college football on the television screen yesterday and last night after like a lot of doubts around the nation. Obviously, there's been some cancellations and definitely regret from the Big Ten, who is a lot of parents and athletes are still protesting as of yesterday. But more importantly, here in Manhattan, Kansas, we made the game week. We were recording on Sunday afternoon, just outside of 2 o'clock here in Manhattan, Kansas. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on my co-host who lives in San Diego, Alex. What is happening out there, man?
Not much, Eddie. It is currently, I don't know what's going on out here right now, because it is currently over 100 degrees in San Diego. So, riddle me that. That makes absolutely no sense. It is just so hot. I'm in Kansas all over again in San Diego. I don't get it, but whatever. I'm just happy that it's game week, that we're finally to game week. You know, we've been sitting here, May, June, talking about football and talking about the rosters and, you know, let's break it down position by position and doing all of this stuff, and we're finally to the point, which we didn't know if we'd get to this point, Eddie, but we're finally at the point where we're to a game week, and we can talk about a football game that's coming up and break it down, and that is obviously really exciting, so I am eager to break down K-State Arkansas State with you.
Yeah, that is right, folks. Before we unpack this on this jam-packed hour, of course, you can find the Purple Project Podcast, the latest and newest addition to the K-State Podcast, wherever podcasts can be found. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, Radio.com, and SoundCloud. Of course, Labor Day is tomorrow as we're recording this. This episode will not go out until the middle of the week, Wednesday evening. So this episode, preview of Arkansas State, will go out Wednesday night. There's also some other activities going on this week, including on the back end, soccer. Friday at home against Texas Tech, 7 Central Time. So, soccer team finally gets underway there. And, of course, we have football, Chris Klieman and the Cats taking on Arkansas State, who was in action last night at 2:30 Saturday on FS1. And, of course, the Oklahoma game was announced too early this week, and it's 11 kickoff, and I pretty much called that one.
You called
Alex.
It. I was about to say, Eddie, you called it right on the nose. You said this has a Gus Johnson box written all over it. Lo and behold, 11 a.m. Central Time, Fox, Gus Johnson. There you go.
Gus Johnson, Joe Clay. Yep, I called it right there on the spot. And Oklahoma's favorite time slot, apparently, 11 a.m. That's next week. But the focus, like Chris Klieman says now, is on Arkansas State, who really put on... they impressed me a little bit last night.
Very impressive.
Yeah. Impressive performance there. They hung around through halftime, and then late in the third quarter got away from them a little bit there. But, yeah, what are your early impressions so far on this Arkansas State team who lost to Memphis last night? But, yeah, they,
I guess I caught Keithan's Valentine's, one of his tweets last night. He said, basically saying, we got to be ready to play. We can't take this team lightly, pretty much. So you can't K-State, you know. This is your first, we talked about this all summer long. And speaking of weather real quick, it's all, tomorrow it's supposed to be really cool. And the rest of the week, it's supposed to be 50s to upper 40s. So ball and K-State football right around the corner, my friend.
You know, thanks for rubbing it in. It's currently 111 where I am. So in a place that's usually 75, 80. So you can just keep rubbing in the fact that it is currently 20 degrees cooler there. That doesn't make any sense, Eddie. This just makes no sense. I can't even... You look at the 10-day forecast. I don't understand how you guys are getting fall and we're stuck with the summer. It's supposed to be the other way around. Whatever. I'll get over that. So anyway, getting to the Arkansas State, the impressions there right off the bat, Eddie, are what you just said. If K-State's not ready to play, they'll lose. I think it's that simple. I think that this is not going to be a game against Buffalo. This is not going to be a game. Buffalo's actually not that bad of a team, but this is still not going to be the equivalent of playing a Buffalo or a North Dakota who are on the schedule. Arkansas State's a better football team, in my opinion. This is a football team that, has had good seasons. They're supposed to compete for the, they're in the Sun Belt. They're expected to compete for the Sun Belt championship this year. I mean, this is a good football team, and the team that they played in Memphis on the road last night, which would have been a handful of nights ago, when by the time people are listening, that Memphis team, that's a good football team. Memphis is a good football team. They're good nearly every year now, for the most part. This is a team, Memphis, that's expected to have a good season, win a lot of football games this year. And I saw a lot of people making the argument that Memphis probably has better skill position players than K-State does, and I think that you could potentially make that argument. And Arkansas State hung with them. You know, Arkansas State was leading for a majority of the first half, and as you mentioned, Memphis kind of pulled away, but Arkansas State had the ball late there, Eddie, with 2 or 3 minutes left, with a chance to score and get it to 6 points and have a chance to try to kick an onside kick or try to get it stopped defensively and then go for the game-winning score. So, I mean, they were still in it all the way to the end of the game against a really good Memphis team on the road. So, for K-State, this is not just going to be, your Southeast Missouri State or your North Dakota or whatever. This isn't going to be, in my opinion, Eddie, your 48-3 cupcake win to begin the season. I mean, K-State's going to have to fight and claw against Arkansas State. And what puts K-State even more behind the eight ball is Arkansas State's got a game under their belt. Like, you know, they've knocked off any rust that they have. They've gotten their feet under themselves. I mean, you know, they've played at game speed. K-State hasn't done that yet. This is going to be K-State's first time hitting the field at game speed for, you know, a long time. And Arkansas State's going to have the advantage of playing a week before. So that's also going to make it a little more difficult for K-State. And we still don't know, Eddie, you know, what how the players work in the offseason. I mean, these non-con games in the Big 12 are really going to expose Big 12 teams, for the good or for bad, on how much they truly were able to prepare while they couldn't practice. You know, how in shape are guys? You know, are they in shape? Are they out of shape? Are they ready to play football? Are they not there physically? So it's going to really be a really good gauge to see where these Big 12 teams are. So if K-State's not ready to go and they come out, Arkansas State absolutely can give them an L. I don't expect that. I do think that K-State will come out and win, just partially because I know Chris Klieman knows how good this team is. And if anything, I think that this game against Memphis might get K-State's attention a little bit more. You know, if you don't show up to play, this team can beat you. Look what they did to Memphis. And Memphis is a good team. Memphis is a team
They were once in the top 25, ranking the top 25 at one point, or a couple points last year.
Exactly. And I think that they won, the last couple of years, they've won double-digit games or been near winning double-digit games. I mean, they're a good football team. So, You know, K-State needs to be ready to play and do that. But at the same time, you know, if K-State can come out and they can play their game, it's really going to start in the trenches, Eddie. I really think that's where it's going to start. If K-State can win up front, then I think that they'll be in good shape. If they're losing the battle up front, that's where things could get really dicey for them. So I think that's the area that you want to watch, especially with K-State that has some new guys, particularly on that offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely get some of those questions answered on Saturday. Arkansas State, the home opener for K-State, dropped the opener to Memphis last night in their football opener, 37-24. And Arkansas State, of course, led by head coach Blake Anderson, and they did a two-quarterback system, and we know that Alex does not like a two-quarterback system, but Lane Hatcher... last night, threw for $166, no TDs and no interceptions. And then the other quarterback that was in there last night, who started the game, Logan Bonner, completed 14 of his passes, $133, threw a touchdown pass and threw two picks in the game last night against Memphis there. So it'd be interesting to see. I mean, Blake Anderson, their plan was to play both quarterbacks, and we saw that last night, and I mean, recording this on Sunday, so I probably would think that they'll play both quarterbacks again against this K-State defense. Now, at the stats here offensively for Arkansas State, they put up 424 yards between the two quarterbacks against the Memphis defense, pass yards 299, rushing on the ground 125, penalized 5 times for 50 yards. Got 25 first downs, Alex. And then third downs, 6 out of 15. And they went for it a couple of times with fourth down. 2 out of 3 there, of course, because some of those were late in the game. And what comes to my mind were a couple of those jump balls. I mean, the announcers last night, Bob Lushusen and Dan Orlowski, they're mainly talking about Arkansas State on offense, you know, taking shots deep downfield. Now, this is an easy transition to the Arkansas offense versus K-State's defense. And K-State last year, we talked about it all summer long, second in points allowed in the Big 12. And they're going to have their hands full with two quarterbacks. Now, going back to my last point about throwing downfield with Arkansas State, they like to take chances. And of course, obviously, there's no more Walter Neal, but you gotta look at a guy like AJ Parker, look at his chops, Keandre Thomas, Wayne Jones, Alexander, the rest of that secondary. They should be pretty hungry for those jump balls, because we saw last night there that number 4 wide receiver for Arkansas State, I don't know, can't remember his name off the top of my head right now, but yeah, he lost a couple of those jump balls now. Yeah. So this is a tremendous opportunity to start on the right foot for that secondary that we've been giving high praise to. They're loaded on the back end, so this is an ultimate test, obviously, for that secondary. And obviously, it starts getting pressure up front. Wyatt Hubert and the hyped-up Khalid Duke on the other side of the line. So this is going to be an interesting test for K-State's defense.
You know, I think that's... honestly, that's what I'm looking forward to the most, to be honest with you, Eddie, is their offense against K-State's defense. I shouldn't say looking forward to most. Well, maybe have me a little concerned the most would be that matchup, because you mentioned 299 through the air for Arkansas State, 125 run the ball. Nice balanced attack for them offensively. Put up 400 yards. I remember the parts of the game that I watched, I thought, well, you know, I hope K-State has a better defensive game plan than Memphis had. I mean, that was really the first thing that was coming through my mind. So I was like, man, they're moving the ball, too easy. And just, you know, with K-State's offense and, you know, some of the unknowns, and we mentioned it, Eddie, they ranked, 8th in the Big 12 last year. If you get too much, you don't want to get too much behind the 8-ball the way K-State plays on offense. You know, you don't want to
right,
get
yeah, yep. That's the wild card right there. Exactly. Yep.
So, K-State's defense needs to play better than Memphis' defense did, in my opinion. And look, I think K-State, in my opinion, has a better defense than Memphis. But it's the first game. And that's always the thing, Eddie. It's you just don't ever know what to expect in that first game. If this was in the game, if this game was the sixth game in the season, heck, even the third non-con game, I'd be less worried about it. But the fact is, the first game, and Arkansas State has gone out. They put up 400 yards already. They're feeling their groove as an offense. I would expect their offense will probably be in even more of a groove against K-State. And then K-State's defense is trying to get their feet wet with a new defensive coordinator. Granted, we've already talked about the defense, and I love the move that they made to Klanderman there. But still, it's a new coordinator in a season where you weren't able to practice fully in the offseason. And now you're going up against this offense. You just put up 400 yards. Is there in a groove? They're playing game speed. And it's a scary deal. And it's kind of got me a little worried. So you look at the QBs. The fact that Arkansas State has a 2-QB system makes me actually feel a little bit better. Because, as you mentioned, I don't like to be 2-QB systems. I feel like it can be kind of hard for a QB to get into a rhythm. And I think that's what happened with Arkansas State. I think that Lane Hatcher and Logan Bonner, I don't think that either one of them necessarily got into a rhythm last night. I think if one of them would have been out there the entire game, they could have. And that might have changed the trajectory of the game. So I'm here's to hoping that they go with the 2-QB system again. But, you mentioned the jump balls, and I think it's an opportunity. I think it's an opportunity for K-State secondary.
And some of those, while I'm thinking about that, some of those jump balls were somewhat kind of either underthrown just a bit or the receiver just couldn't hang on to him. I know one of the interceptions, the defensive back from Memphis just took it away from the wide receiver.
Yeah. And look, we know that A.J. Parker can do that. We know these K-State defensive backs can do that. Honestly, I think the K-State defensive backs were somewhat ball hawks last year. I thought they did a nice job at coming down on some of those jump balls, jumping some rounds, and getting picks like that. And so, I think that it's an opportunity for K-State if Arkansas State wants to make some risky throws. I think K-State secondary welcomes that because I really think that they're good at taking the ball away. And I think that there's some opportunity for them to force multiple turnovers. So, and I think that's the key. If you're K-State, you want to try to force multiple turnovers. You want to get more possessions in Arkansas State. You want to try to get that offense in a rhythm. And try to, get Arkansas State out of a rhythm. So, there's really an opportunity there if they can, get a couple picks, for them to be able to steal a couple possessions, get that K-State offense in a rhythm, and it really can just set the tone for the entire game. So, I think that that's an opportunity for them. And the final thing with it, Eddie, is Arkansas State just pivoting to the running game. They did a nice, they did some nice things to the running game. Now Jamal Jones, 15 carries, 64 yards. I mean, that was something that he didn't necessarily catch my attention as much as Isaiah Azubuike, who had 5 carries, 39 yards, and a touchdown. He only had 5 carries, but 8 yards a carry. He looked good in the 5 carries he had.
Mm-hmm.
If he gets more touches against K-State, that's something that could possibly be worrisome. But I do trust the K-State defensive line to be able to slow the run game down a bit. But we saw K-State's defensive line get exposed by some running backs last year. So that could be another challenge for them. If Arkansas State decides, we really don't want to pick on that K-State secondary. We feel like we can expose them with the running game. They may have a couple backs that could make things a little uncomfortable for K-State.
Yeah, and to finish the line on the leading receiver for Arkansas State, the Red Wolves, who come into Manhattan this Saturday, Dahu Green led the way in receiving yards for 5, caught 5 passes for a career-high 99 yards there against Memphis last night. So that's going to be, we talked about it already, that's going to be a challenge on that side of the football. Now, wild card, in my mind, obviously, is the offense. We turn our attention to the offense versus the defense. K-State's offense versus Arkansas State's defense. And Memphis put up 502 yards on them. Threw for 275. Obviously, Memphis has one of the good quarterbacks in the American Conference there. 227 on the ground, and then first downs 29 earned against that defense, and then they were 9 of 17 on third down, and he went for it once and got a conversion there on that. So Memphis moved the ball, and Memphis they kind of struggled a little bit early on in the game moving the ball against that Red Wolves defense, which caught my eyes as well. And we know the issues going in this year with this offense. I mean, Cordy Messingham. I almost lost train of thought there for a second. But Messingham, second season on the offensive coordinator on Chris Klieman's staff here in K-State land. I'm really interested to find out if their offense can get in a rhythm. I mean, last year we saw it early on in the season. Now they didn't play any tougher teams, but they rolled through Bowling Green. I can't remember their first opponent off the top of my head, but they rolled through and they controlled things.
Looked great.
They look fantastic on the ground. And so we know the ups and downs of Skylar Thompson. We don't know where we're going to get there, obviously, and all the attention will be focused on him. But I'm even been listening to and hearing, at least, obviously we're not official media, obviously, not anymore, for the last a few years. But what I've been hearing is, at least on the running back side, when we talked about Kerry Trotter this summer, and we talked only a little bit about Tyler Burns, and we've been, if that's correct, they could be the 1-2 punch they're going into this game on Saturday. And then there was talks about Jarcadia Wright, who, again, just beat down the Iowa State defense. And he looked good early on in the season last year before Chris Klieman and Messingham and company kind of backed off a little bit.
He had some injuries.
Yeah, injuries, yeah. Bam, yeah, that's right. That's right, Alex, that's right. So, and then all of a sudden we talk about Joe Irvin, and there's question marks about him. I think he's hurt a little bit. I might be wrong on that, but there's been some whispers about that. So that's interesting on that front there. So if K-State can control and obviously we're going to find out about this offensive line. We will find out immediately on Saturday about this offensive line. I mean, we'll get those questions answered, but if they can control the clock like they did in bits and pieces early on in the season like they did last year, I think they should be okay. Now, obviously, Harry Trotter, I'd like to see Jarcadia Wright get a little bit more touches on Saturday, hopefully. But, again, we don't know. We'll find out on Saturday. But I would like, this is just my opinion, but I'd like to see him get the ball, big back, can put the hurting on you a little bit. So, I mean, yeah, what are your thoughts a little bit going in with this K-State offense here? Cordy Messingham, second year here. Skylar Thompson, obviously. Senior quarterback, this is going to be his last year, despite all the talks about extra eligibility, which I don't understand. That's a whole other conversation. That's as weird as other stuff. But anyways, Alex, what are your thoughts for K-State offensively against this Arkansas State defense?
Yeah, you know, getting back to the running back conversation, really interesting there. And it, obviously, I think that's the most prevalent spot to begin, running back, because I think that's exactly what K-State is going to want to do in Cordy Messingham. I think that they're going to want to set the tone with the run, because they're going to want to that's just how it, you know, the run sets up the pass. That's just kind of how Chris Klieman's offenses have always, Cordy Messingham offenses have always worked. Going back to North Dakota State, going back to last year at K-State, you know, you establish the run and sets up the pass. I mean, so I think that's what they're going to do. And you talk about the running game and the running backs, and we don't know what to expect. We really don't know what to expect. I know this is just, it might be falling on deaf ears at this point, but man, Eddie, the fact that we don't have the access to the team that we've had in past years, and the fact that we couldn't see them, you know, we didn't have media, Big 12 media days. We didn't have the spring game. We didn't have all these different things.
Yep.
We just don't know. We don't know what's going on inside the veneer complex the way that we would other seasons. So I have no idea, honestly, who's gonna be lining up in the backfield to start the game. It could be Harry Trotter. It could be Jarcadia Wright. Is Joe Irvin hurt? Who knows? You know, is he? I have no idea. You know, will we see something from Deuce Vaughn? Will Tyler Burns be in the mix? I don't know. I really don't. The good thing is that I feel like KJ's got a lot of backs, and I trust the backs that they have. I think that they got five backs, honestly, that I really trust. When you look at, you know, you look at Irvin Vaughn, Wright, Burns, Trotter. Honestly, all five of those guys, I would feel relatively comfortable with them rolling them out. So, the good news is they have depth. They have depth there, and that's a big thing. That's a big thing to have depth. Guys that have, four of the five guys have played meaningful snaps in college football. So, you know, that's a big thing. I think K-State, ideally, is best. Their best. They will be at their best if they can have Jarcadia Wright and Joe Irvin as a 1-2 combo. I think that 1-2 combo could be them at their best. Now, I think that if Deuce Vaughn comes on, he could also, you know, maybe that changes, maybe he gets inserted. But personally, I feel like a Jarcadia Wright, Joe Irvin 1-2 punch would be K-State's offense at their best until Deuce Vaughn maybe came on. We've obviously heard great things about him. Who knows if he comes on to that point this year or not. But personally, I think that is their best 1-2 punch. I don't think that's what we're going to see against Arkansas State. You mentioned about rumors about Joe Irvin and injuries. I think, I told you this earlier in the summer, Eddie. Mm-hmm. I think the K-State early on is going to rely on Harry Trotter. I really do. I don't think that they're just going to submerge Jarcadia Wright. So here you go. You know, you're a bell cow, 30 carries a game. Well, first off, that's never what Chris Klieman's done. He's always had a committee of running backs. He wants multiple guys. So that's just not going to happen. But I don't think that they're going to be quite as reliant on the young guys early on as they might be later in the season. So I think that you're going to see Harry Trotter get a good chunk of touches. I think you're going to see Tyler Burns get some touches. He got some touches early in the season last year as well. It kind of faded as the season went on, but he did get some touches early on. I think you could possibly see that again. And we'll see how many touches Jarcadia gets. We'll see if Joe Irvin plays. We'll see if we maybe see Deuce Vaughn out there. But I think that's the biggest question mark, is what does that running back group look like? Really eager to see that. But there's no doubt in my mind that they're going to try to set up the offense with a running game, and then try to set the pass up with it. So I think that's what they're going to do. And you know what? If I'm K-State, you know, how about just some simple passes? You know, try a, you know, maybe a little bubble screen to Youngblood early on. See if he can break it. You know, maybe just a little quick slant to Malik Knowles. And see if he can break it. You know, I think that, you know, you just want to get Skyler comfortable. You know, a couple easier throws. Maybe you have Skyler, maybe you roll him out on a few bootlegs early on. You give him a run-pass option. So if the pass isn't open, you know, he can use his legs to make a play, because Skyler's good at making plays with his legs. And if somebody's open, you know, he can dump it off and get a completion that way. So I think for K-State, you want to mix some things in that are some more higher percentage plays, some things that can get the guys comfortable early, you know, some more basic run plays, some easier passes for Skyler. And then once you get their feet wet, then maybe you can come up, you know, you can do a little more of your complex stuff. But early on, I think you just want to get the feet wet. I think you want to try to establish the run, you know, have Skyler get a couple easy throws, get him feeling good early on. You know, get him using his legs. Maybe a few QB draws. See if he can maybe break one if you're winning the battle up front. And then you want to give the line an opportunity just to round it out. You want to give the line an opportunity to be able to set the tone as well. Because with all those new guys, if you can get that offensive line getting in a groove early. You know, you can get them some running plays, and then they get in a groove, and they're beating guys off the ball. That's just going to help the offensive line get chemistry and continuity, and that's ultimately probably the most important thing for this offense, is that offensive line gets chemistry and continuity. So I think that you want to do some things that put them in a position to be able to win some matchups up front, and that's just going to benefit the entire offense.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
On the defensive side of the ball for Arkansas State last night, leading tackler, of course, was, I'm probably going to butcher his name, his last name, but the freshman cornerback, Jarius Rimenick. We're just going to roll with the flow there. Sorry, Jarius, but he was the leading tackler last night with the Eagles.
Dude, I was going to mention him, but I was going to box his name, so I was like, never mind. I guess I won't mention him.
I'll take the heat for that. He had 11 tackles last night. Merrill, the second leading tackle in here, had his first name in here, but now I don't. But anyways, Merrill was on here. 7 tackles, and then the other guy on here as well, Brown, he had 6 tackles as well, and we apologize for not having the full first names, but anyways, so F. Merrill, and you can look it up, Alex, if you want to, but he had number 92, okay, so he had 7 tackles, and then number 28 on that defense for Arkansas State, what's his first name? His last name's Brown. 6 tackles.
Jeff Mario. I probably said that wrong, but Jeff Mario?
We're with that. Jeff Mario Brown.
I'm sure I butchered that. Oh, my gosh.
It's all right. Well, it's the other team. Six tackles.
As long as we know our guys.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. As long as we know our guys, we are good. Otherwise, there's something wrong with us. But anyways, yeah, so... And kind of to back up a little bit here, of course, last year, offensively for K-State, 117 total first downs. Well, actually, no, check that. That's rushing yards, my bad. So that's 117 yards on the ground. And through the air with Skylar Thompson, 116. Of course, some of those were backups. Of course, Holcomb and Nick Aus last year. Of course, Holcomb transferred last year, unfortunately. That sucked. But, of course, look at the rushing yards for K-State last year as a total with Brown, Gilbert, Trotter, Wright, Irvin, who touched the ball, Burns, over 25,000 yards rushing, the exact number, 2,632 yards on the ground. So, if they want to play ball control, like we know they can, they got the backs to do it like Alex talked about. Now, obviously, through the year, obviously, Malik knows if he can stay healthy, that's the key thing. Healthy is the key. He can have a big season. Of course, we're only playing 10 games, but still, he can have a big game and receive a couple of receivers that we haven't mentioned yet. And I mean, they've gotten lost in the Joshua Youngblood, Malik Knowles, obviously, Bradley Moore, the transfer tight end. I'm anxious to see how they use the tight end.
Yeah.
I mean, they did not have the depth at tight end, or at least the Vesigiv athletes there. Now you get, and I did not know about Bradley Moore. Apparently, he's a childhood friend of Skylar Thompson. I did not know that. So, yeah, that was a fascinating fact to hear over one of the episodes podcast over from another K-State podcast, but. I'm interested to see how they use the tight end. You got to let tight end transfer from Northern Iowa and Bradley Moore. We talked about him the last few weeks on this podcast. And these are the guys I was going to get to. Joaquin Gill and Phillip Brooks. These guys. Obviously, they made huge impacts, Phillip Brooks, last year. So they've kind of gotten lost under the shovel here. So, obviously, I mean, they got a good freshman corner on the other end for Arkansas State, but... Again, with these tight ends and wide receivers, I expect these guys, if the offensive line can give Skylar Thompson time, again, that's a key word there in that sentence, then I expect Skylar Thompson to find to at least hit some big plays downfield.
Yeah, you know, Eddie, I think that you're onto something there. And I'm just quickly, I just wanted to kind of reiterate Arkansas State being good one more time with people, because they won 8 games last year. I just looked and saw what they did. They are coming off an 8-win season and winning their bowl game as well. So
Which K-State did not do last year.
K-State did not do that. They actually beat a really good Florida International team. That people may be like, who's Florida International? That's actually a good team. But getting back to your point, you're right, Eddie. There are a lot of offensive weapons in the pass game that K-State can utilize that get overlooked. You talk about Joaquin Gill. He's a really nice receiver. You know, he can do a lot of nice things, and I think that he often gets overlooked. I overlooked Phillip Brooks earlier this season, Eddie, in a podcast that we were talking about. And that tells you everything you need to know, because I think Phillip Brooks is a great tool for K-State. I told you, when you can get a guy like Phillip Brooks and on the field, paired with a Malik Knowles and paired with a Joshua Youngblood, you have so much speed on the offense that the defense has to respect it. Because if they can't, if they don't respect that speed, then Skyler could just throw easy deep bombs all day. Because K-State they can get behind that defense. I mean, if you really want to, you know, take Youngblood on one-on-one when he's going deep, you know, good luck, you know, with no safety help. I mean, it's just not gonna work. You need to be able to, when you have that much speed, you've got to, something's going to be open for K-State, whether it's the passing game deep with those guys that are quick, or they're going to be defending against the pass, and then you're going to have a lighter box for K-State can run the ball. So that's the value of the speed. I think that it's just so, I think it gets overlooked a lot of times, Eddie, is how important the threat of speed is. Even if you're not doing anything, the threat of having Phillip Brooks on the field with Youngblood, with Malik Knowles, same thing for Joaquin Gill. You put him on the field with those guys, and you've got that type of speed. You've got to respect that speed, because if you just load the box up, Skyler's going to have opportunities just to pick them apart with the guys, with those receivers, especially with that speed that they have. So there's no doubt in my mind that K-State is better equipped this year from an offensive standpoint if they can stay healthy. That is the key. Because if you do lose a Malik Knowles, you lose a Youngblood, the defense can totally kind of change the way they defend you, put all their resources just on that one guy, still be able to load the box and try to make it difficult for you to run the ball. So, but if you can have, you know, have all these tools or weapons at your disposal, it can make the K-State offense probably work at play at a much higher rate. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. You mentioned the tight end. Really interesting to see how they're going to use it. Chris Kleiman, Courtney Messingham, they like tight ends. They like to use them and integrate them where they can, and Bill Snyder did as well. So I expect them to get some, you know, to get some usage out of the position as well. Heck, Eddie, expect the same thing from the fullback. You know, expect the fullback to get touches as well, and some things. You know, K-State's going to use everybody. I really do think they're gonna use everybody, and I think that it's you know, something to keep an eye out on. But there's no doubt in my mind that this offense as a whole is more equipped and better equipped to be successful this year than they were last year. And if you take that and throw in Skyler playing at a higher level, which I do expect, than he did last year, then that just sets you up even more. But I think you've got more potential at the run game. I think you've got more potential at the in the passing game. And I think you've got potential to see Skyler play at a higher level. So those are all good things. But K-State's got some really nice weapons at receiver, and they got some depth, so they might be able to absorb an injury better than they did last year, which is a good thing.
Yeah, that's right. Always, and since Chris Kleiman's come on here, I know it's been not too long, over a year now, with him, the recruiting, we mentioned a little bit on the Pearl Project. Yeah, man, they've built up. That's what they've been focusing on since Chris Kleiman's got back, or has been named head coach of the Cats. I mean, their main focus was adding depth to all the positions. So we're seeing it. We're starting to see it now. We talked about the depth at quarterback, running back, wide receiver, which you talked about, tight end, the secondary, the back end, the defensive end, the defensive line, excuse me, linebacker. So you're starting to see them replenish in all positions. And we haven't mentioned K-State. I know it's kind of a side note here, but Ty Zentner breaking in, K-State breaking in a new punter. That's going to be interesting to see if K-State does punt on Saturday against Arkansas State. But yeah, they're going to be breaking in a new punter after having Devin Enkel for a few years. So that's something to look out for, K-State fans, as well. If, again, those of you are going to the game now, obviously, it's not, I mean, just looking at, I know I'm going sideways here, but just looking at the games yesterday on ESPN, Marshall over Eastern Kentucky, between the home crowds of Marshall, Texas State, my bad, and Memphis, yeah, it's like kind of like high school a little bit, maybe even like KU, like, sorry KU, a little shout at you there, but yeah, so it just, that's going to be interesting. I mean, college football, we talked about it on the podcast, Alex, about, you know, a few weeks ago, about not having the full capacity crowd. So that could play some jitters a little bit for K-State, but I don't think it's going. Now, obviously, before we end the podcast, we'll have our predictions, but I don't want to go too fast. But yeah, the crowd hopefully does not play a huge impact with these players. Obviously, they're going to be hungry to go out and play, whether it's a full crowd or not. But yeah, I find that going to be. It was a little weird at first, but after the first game, I thought, okay, this is going to be the college football of 2020 with no sold-out crowds for college football, which is unfortunate due to this pandemic we've been talking about all year long. So, yeah, I mean, just to put a pin on the K-State-Arkansas State talk here, that's what I'm going to be looking for there. And oh, by the way, Justin Hughes making his return there. Back to the middle linebacker spot. Obviously, Elijah Sullivan had a big year last year, so I expect him to continue to make big plays. But having Justin Hughes, the soul, heart, and soul of your defense back, could be huge for this defense.
It could be enormous. It could be absolutely enormous having Justin Hughes back. We all know just how really how big his role is. I mean, he plays a big role. First off, just going back to punter. No pressure filling Devin Engel's shoes, right? I mean, you know, he was just the best punter in the Big 12. No pressure there. But no, Justin Hughes plays a huge role. I really like what K-State has as a linebacker. I really do, Eddie. I think that they've got, on defense, good players at all three levels. And I mentioned that earlier, but I think that is the important thing for them. The thing with Justin is, he is going to have to. He hasn't played football. What, live football game? And how long? I mean, it's been well over a year.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Yeah,
it's been a couple years. So he's not going to come in, and I don't think he's just going to come in and be the Justin Hughes of old. He's going to have to knock some rust off. He's going to have to get lay a couple hits to get comfortable. He's going to. It's going to be, in my opinion, kind of an ease in for him. You know, he's got to get his game legs under him at game speed, and we'll see how that goes. And I'm obviously optimistic to see what happens there and with him. And before I toss it back to you, I just have to quickly mention that ESPN released. So we don't have to go into detail about it. They released their power rankings for college football, and K-State came in at number 24 in their power ranking, but there were just a couple of things I had to point out. I just had to point it out.
Okay.
So Oklahoma at 6, that's no surprise. But Texas is at 9, so there's that. And then you've got Iowa State coming in at 13. How about that? Iowa State at 13, Oklahoma State's at 11. And then you've got TCU at 16, so, you know, jump on that TCU hype train, apparently, that won't stop. And then you scroll down, we were talking about Memphis. Memphis is number 19 on that list. K-State's at 24, Memphis is at 19. That gives people an idea of how good Memphis is, Arkansas State is. The fact that Memphis is 19 there. Baylor comes in at 21. K-State comes in at 24. So you look at the top 25, I mean, the Big 12's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams in the top 25 in the power rankings. So that tells you right there everything you need to know about what ESPN at least thinks of the Big 12 going into the season.
Yeah, so the Big 12, part of the Power Five there. That's interesting numbers there, Alex, that you brought up there. So K-State right up there in the mix. So yeah, Arkansas State put up a fight against Memphis last night, but could not cash in as they lose to 37-24 in the hometown, or actually the home city of where the Liberty Bowl is at for Memphis, 37-24.
Last game played.
Oh, don't bring do not bring it up. And speaking of that, Navy, I know we're recording this podcast on a Sunday afternoon. Navy plays tomorrow night. When this podcast comes out, we'll know the score of Navy versus BYU. That's gonna be a fun matchup there tomorrow night. So okay, so now we'll have our prediction here at the end of the podcast. I want to switch gears, and yes, still to come, my predictions record or where K-State will fall. But first, the Big 12. Let's look around a little bit here at the Big 12 schedule going into this upcoming weekend. So Iowa State, obviously ranked in the top 25. Their start at home against Louisiana on ESPN, that's the early game, 11 Central Time. And then another early game for the Big 12, West Virginia at home against Eastern Kentucky, who got absolutely waxed by Marshall 59-0 yesterday in a boring game, which I fell asleep multiple times. 59-0 there. Again, in Eastern Kentucky, the road does not get easier for them. In another early game in the early 11 o'clock slot on Fox, Baylor at home, no Matt Rhule, against Louisiana Tech.
Looking through here, Eddie, it looks like there's going to be some... look, this isn't a cupcake week for a lot of teams in the Big 12, Eddie, because if you look down the Big 12 slate of games next Saturday, well, first off...
I wanted to start off with the early games for going in, going to late games.
Playing at Louisiana, that's not a cupcake team that Iowa State's going up against. Louisiana is a team that we've seen in bowl games in the past, and so
that's right.
You know,
yep,
that's a team that could push Iowa State. We've seen Iowa State in years past, Eddie, be a little shaky the first couple of weeks of the season. We've seen them drop a game in the non-con multiple times that they probably shouldn't lose. They seem to really gain steam as the season goes on. So that'll be one to keep an eye on. I'm with you. I think West Virginia will take care of Eastern Kentucky, no problem. Baylor, Louisiana Tech, that is another game that could be intriguing, because Louisiana Tech, kind of like Louisiana, they are a team that has some experience, and they have made bowl games multiple times. I don't know how their team looks this year, but they've got a group of a program there that has won games in the past. And so, Baylor with a new coaching staff, new schemes. How will they adjust to that? Having this wacky off season, that could be a really interesting one to watch.
Yeah, and I'm looking at what you talked about earlier, Alex. I'm looking at that Louisiana-Iowa State, because last year, Iowa State was pushed to the brink of being upset at home last year. Can't remember the opponent last year. Dang it.
It seems like every year really does to them. It seems like every year there is some opponent that either pushes them to the brink or gets them.
Yeah. Yep. So, Iowa State. So, Louisiana opens up the Big 12 schedule on a nightcap which Alex was going to get to, which I'm going to run down these games here. The second half of the slate, which is all night games besides, well, in the middle, don't forget about K-State, Wildcat Nation, taking on Arkansas State on FS1, 2:30 Saturday. Home opener for K-State. Now, Oklahoma at home against Missouri State, Oklahoma. Oklahoma ranked 5th in the country coming in to this game. Of course, that's K-State's opponent next week. A whole lot of discussion about that on the next podcast. But then Oklahoma State takes on Tulsa. OSU ranked 15th to start the season. They with the controversial Mike Gundy again at the head coach still. I can go on and on with that, but that's a whole other podcast there. Texas opens up at home against UTEP on Longhorn Network. And then 7 o'clock game, another one. Tech hosts Houston Baptist. Houston Baptist played a game, and apparently they lost. So Houston Baptist starts off the season 0-1, going to Lubbock. And to wrap things up, oh boy, this got a lot of jokes on Twitter. Coastal Carolina taking on KU, 9 o'clock on FS1 to wrap things up. And the last time apparently KU played this team, they lost against Coastal Carolina. There's been a lot of jokes on Twitter about that. So Kansas.
don't forget, Eddie, this is the revenge game. Remember, Puka Williams said that they scheduled this game.
You mentioned it last week. Yeah, you said that. Yep.
That's what they do at Kansas. They schedule revenge games against Coastal Carolina. But they do. They don't let teams like that, you know, let it fly. I saw somebody else posting a video of Coastal Carolina celebrating in a locker room. I'm going to share this video every day for the next 2 weeks to remind people that this is not okay. And it's like, how about you just don't lose to Coastal Carolina? I don't know. Going on the web there, guys.
Yeah, so just looking at that again, Coastal Carolina, Kansas, that's going to be, at least for us here in Manhattan, Kansas, here in Purple Nation, that's going to be something to pay attention to there to see if KU stumbles on their toes once again. It's pretty much straightforward here, at least for this week. You know what I mean? Some cupcakes here. I mean, let's face it, Oklahoma State, they're going to be contenders in the Big 12. We mentioned this throughout the summer on the podcast. Texas should take care of UTEP. And then I don't know much about Houston Baptist there. So Texas Tech there should be able to roll past them.
Yeah, so you look at the second half with the evening games. I don't think that there's as many intriguing storylines as there are in the early games, because I think K-State and Arkansas State's an intriguing storyline because of what Arkansas State did and showed. So I think there's an intriguing storyline there. I already mentioned that Louisiana Tech, Baylor, and then Louisiana and Iowa State, I think three of those four games could really be intriguing. If you look at the back half, it's not quite as intriguing. Tulsa is a good program. They, once again, they kind of fall into the category that they've won some big games from time to time. They've been in a bowl game here or there, but I don't think that Oklahoma State's going to have any problem with them at all. I think that they'll do what they want to do there. Obviously, Oklahoma and Missouri State, that's not even fair. So Oklahoma will have their way with them. And you look at UTEP. UTEP's had some good years in the past, but they really have not been very good the last few years. And so Texas should be able to roll with them as well. Then Houston Baptist, I don't think that Tech will have an issue with there. So I think the Oklahoma State game could be one to tune in, because like I said, Tulsa doesn't fall into a cupcake category. Maybe they can make things a little uncomfortable for Oklahoma State, but we'll just keep an eye out on that. I mean, maybe UTEP could make things a little uncomfortable if they bounce back and have a better year, but don't expect that either. I think the KU Coastal Carolina one's intriguing. I do. Because of all the storylines around it, KU's so hell-bent on this whole revenge thing on Coastal Carolina, which is just so funny to me. It's just hilarious. It really is. But they're so hell-bent on this whole revenge thing with Coastal Carolina that it's a win-win for me, Eddie. Because, you know, KU, if they go out and they win, cool, you should be Coastal Carolina. If they come out and lose after all this revenge talk, that would just be the funniest thing that It just would be so funny. I can't even tell you how funny that would be. So that'll obviously be intriguing to see. I don't know what Coastal Carolina's team looks like this year. I don't know how good they're supposed to be, but I guess we'll see. One note though, Eddie, is there was one game that was postponed, TCU SMU. It was postponed because of COVID. And that would have been an intriguing game. That would have been a game I would have wanted to see. It would have actually been on Friday night. And so that one would have been one that I think would have been really interesting with this kind of hype that TCU's got going, playing an SMU team who I believe has already played a game. I think they've actually
SMU?
Won. Yes.
Yeah, they played yesterday. Yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, I mean, they beat Texas State on the road, so I think that would have been a really intriguing game to see TCU playing SMU. But as I mentioned, that game is now canceled due to COVID spreading through TCU. Once again, that's the thing I think we need to keep an eye on this week, Eddie, as the things progress. It looks like, you know, we've got these games scheduled, but there has been one that's postponed, and things move so quickly that something could come up and we could get some more postponements. But it does sound like the Big 12 has made it relatively clear that as long as teams have 53 healthy players on a roster, they're going to play. So it doesn't sound like there's a scenario where things would just get wiped out. But if a team decides, because I believe I could be wrong, but I believe TCU made the decision to not play that game, and they're going to look to reschedule it later in the season. But I believe that was TCU's decision. So I guess we'll just keep an eye and seek out how those things progress during the week. But that's one game that would have been an interesting one to see that we'll just have to wait to see a little later in the year.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, so that would have been a fun game to watch there. Obviously, SMU, we saw a former Texas quarterback, Shane Leuchel, put up some numbers. Now he's with the SMU Mustangs. Led that win there against Texas State yesterday, so that would have been a fun match to watch. Unfortunately, we don't get... Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, he's a good QB. I always thought in Texas that he could play. I really did. And, you know, I mean, Ellinger's always the guy that they should have at Texas, but, you know, Leuchel, he's not a bad QB. He's not bad.
he ain't bad at all. And another game that got postponed nationally, that was postponed due to COVID, was the Central Florida, who comes in ranked number 21 in the nation against rival Florida International. That was postponed. That was supposed to be scheduled for this upcoming Saturday. That's been postponed due to COVID as well. And speaking of all that, being on that COVID watch, Alex, Tennessee, before I get to my season predictions, Tennessee, man, woo, 44 players had either a COVID issue or had something else going on. So they were supposed to scrimmage at some point either yesterday or not. Now, I could be wrong, but it was all over ESPN yesterday. I thought that was a bam, a wow stat, 44 players. And Jerry Pruitt said 7 or 8 cases were active or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, this is something that we're all going to have to watch. And, yeah, we might be somewhere in the clear, but you never know. I mean, you have to get, this is going to be a repeated cycle now. I mean, can we get through 10 games? I mean, it's possible. But, again, this is something we all, as K-State fans, going to have to keep our eye on, as hopefully we can get the Saturday with no issues, but you never know with this, but hopefully we have our guys, but if not, somebody else has to step up. And it goes back to that whole depth issue, that there's guys lined up, it's next man up pretty much. So
yeah, it really is. The thing is that it's not going away. We know it's not going away. This is something they're going to have to deal with all season long. Guys are going to get it. Guys are going to be able to play because of it. But the Big 12's been they were relatively vocal this week. As long as you got 53 healthy guys, you're probably going to play. So, number one, there could be, if there's a huge outbreak on the team, yes, that can absolutely shut things down. And if multiple teams get it, yes, the Big 12 could absolutely have to shut things down. So, all season long, we're going to have to keep an eye on that. But, you talk about the depth. It's going to be huge. It's not unreasonable to say Skylar Thompson may have to miss a couple games because he has COVID, and will allow us to step in. You know, it's not unreasonable to say, you know, oh my gosh, the running back room got the COVID and three of the five backs are out, you know, or the offensive line. That might be the most realistic because you have those bodies in there. The offensive line gets wiped out because of COVID, and all of a sudden you got a backup offensive line. I mean, look, you know, those are just the realities of the season. And, you know, you've got to be ready to be able to deal with it. And as fans, we got to understand that we're going to be seeing some things that we've never seen before. So, and this, we're just going to have to roll with the bunches and take them as they come.
That's right, yeah. When me and Kate were talking about that exact same thing last night, about what if Skylar Thompson gets COVID, somebody else is going to have to step up and play. Yeah. So that's just the perfect example right there. So again, this is something that weekly that we're going to have to keep an eye on here on the Purple Project Podcast. But for right now, I mean, we haven't heard much yet besides of the seven players who did get COVID. We don't know who they are, but that's something.
That number has actually risen to 12. I saw it went from 7 to 10 to 12.
Woo!
K-State's currently dealing with 12 cases.
Man, so we all hope.
They're there. We don't know who it is.
That's the thing. We don't know who they are. So, but we know that for sure. But for sure, when we see the players on Saturday, we'll know. I mean, we'll know more at least. So,
that's that.
All right. So, okay. So, Alex did his predictions on the schedule episode a few weeks back. I want to get to mine here, run through mine here really fast before we get to predictions about Arkansas State in my overtime segment here on the Purple Project. All right. So, I'm going to save Arkansas State there for last because we're going to predict that game at the end of the show. Go straight in the Big 12 schedule. As much as I want to put K-State to win this game, and they could, but I mean, big no sellout crowd or little or 25% crowd, it's gonna be a tough game. Oklahoma's gonna be really hungry after what we did to them last year. I got that marked down as a loss. I mean, hey, we pulled out. You can go back to this episode and make fun of me or whatever. But I got that as the loss. And fortunately, I talked about this a few weeks ago. You don't lose your conference opener, but strong on the road and forever, for whatever reason, the last several years, K-State's opened up these games on the road. And they're supposed to play West Virginia to open a Big 12 schedule. Now you're going to turn around and play the number 5 team on the road. It's going to be a hard game for them. I got that marked as a loss. Now, Texas Tech. I got, and again, I'm going back to what I said in the schedule episode. You got to take care of the game, the wins. You got to win the winnable games. That's a must. And Tech, we're going to take care of them. Texas Tech at home. We got that. I got that as a win. So, the TCU hype train. Everybody's want to hype on.
Yeah.
In Fort Worth, we're going to beat TCU. That's going to be a win there. And I said all along, Gary Patterson, I think he's hit the end of the ropes down there. So, got that as a win there. So, that's two wins there. KU here, homecoming game. KU, yeah, that's a win there. Les Miles, yeah, we'll take care of you there. So, that's three wins, right? That's three in a row. Got down. And now, West Virginia at Morgantown. Woo! So these games have come down to like the last possession, and for whatever reason, K-State, and I keep harboring back on this, they should have won last year's game. I don't know what happened there, but Chris Klieman, they're gonna have the boys ready to play. They're gonna break through and get West Virginia in Morgantown there. So that's four wins in a row there.
Yeah.
And now we're 4-1 in conference play. And get Oklahoma State and good old Mike Gundy at home, OSU. That's going to be a loss there. They got weapons, despite the whole disagreements and whatnot. I don't know what's going on with Mike Gundy. Mike Gundy can be two-faced, it looks like. At least it's my opinion. But Oklahoma State, they just got too many weapons offensively. Now, I mean, last year, I mean, we didn't expect to beat Oklahoma. So this is what kind of one of these games, like, I don't know. But right now, Oklahoma State has lost their second conference loss there with the Oklahoma. So that's that. That's 4-2 moving down to the last third of the schedule. Iowa State going back up to Ames, and this is the COVID year. Don't have to deal with the sellout crowd. And the last time they were in Ames, they jumped on Iowa State. Should have won a couple years ago up there. Well, I'm going to use the same rule like I did to West Virginia. They're going to get up there. And yes, they got Brock Purdy up there, but I think they can go up there and win. I think they can go up there and do that and knock off Iowa State. So that's another conference win in the books there. And then Baylor, at Baylor and Waco. And unfortunately, you wish, this is what we talked about on that same episode, that you wish you would have got Baylor early instead of late in the year, right? So unfortunately, Baylor could hit their stride, and this is one of those tough games that we're going to lose on the road against Baylor. So that's three losses there, and then the wild card, in my opinion, good old Texas at home, last game. It's going to be cold, December first weekend, cold. And this is going to depend on where Texas is at. If Texas is contending for a spot in Arlington, they might be ready to play. But if not, they happen to check out.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
And I know they have Sam Ellinger's been there forever, it seems like. But I think we can go get Texas. I mean, last time they were here in Manhattan, and I was at this game, and I mentioned this earlier this summer on the podcast, I mean, a special teams, a punt return for a touchdown, that can't happen on special teams, especially on a team that built. I mean, yes, Bill Steiner has finally moved on a year and some change now, but K-State's game is special teams. We saw all last year with Joshua Youngblood return all his kicks. Malik Knowles, huge kickoff return against Mississippi State on the road. I think we can get Texas. I'm going to chalk that up as a win. We'll win our regular season finale, beat Texas, finally take them down. Speaking of revenge games, get our revenge on Texas from last year's heartbreak on the road. So that I got six wins there, and I might as well just go ahead and say, while I'm on this topic, go ahead and say it now. And I'll get your predictions right now also, Alex, on Arkansas State, obviously we saw them last night play Memphis tough. Now, K-State can get off the mat here, off the bat, and score in the first quarter, put up a couple of touchdowns on them, then this should be, I'm probably bad about saying this, but this should be no problem game. But if they don't get off to a good start, this game could go deep in the third, fourth quarter, or at least the start of the fourth quarter. Arkansas State can put up a fight a little bit there, but eventually, K-State, they will come out on top in this one. My score here, and oh, by the way, I got K-State at 7 wins, Alex, by the way. Let's see, K-State, ooh. I'm going to go K-State 34, Arkansas State 20.
I like it. So for me, I think that the K-State-Arkansas State game is really going to come down to, as I told you at the beginning of the podcast, winning up front. If they can win up front, offensive line, defensive line, then they're going to be able to control this game. If they can't, then they could be in for a long day. So I think that that is going to be where the game could be won or lost. I'm with you, Eddie. I think K-State's going to win this game. I think it's going to be... I think it'll honestly kind of follow the trajectory that Arkansas State-Memphis game was. I think it's going to be
a
very close, competitive game in the first half. And I think K-State's just going to kind of wear them down as the game goes on. I think K-State's going to really focus on trying to impose their will. And then when the second half rolls around, I think that K-State will just continually wear them down, and then they'll start to just get a little separation, just get a little more separation. I don't think it's going to be some sexy win by K-State. They're just going to be high flying and just making all these crazy plays. I think it'll be a sloppy game. I think that K-State is not going to. I don't think that they'll play their best football, but I think that they're going to really focus on running basic sets, imposing their will, winning the line of scrimmage and just kind of wearing them down and getting into a groove and getting their legs under them. And I expect K-State to win, too. I'm going to give it a score, Eddie, of 31-17. So you said you went 34-20. I'll go
34-20. Yeah,
34-20.
Yep.
I'll go 31-17 for them. And then just as a recap, you gave them 7 wins, and I gave them, when we were talking, because people didn't hear if they didn't hear the show where we broke down the schedule. First off, they should go back and listen if they didn't.
Yep, that good. Yep, good. But good throwing there.
But I gave K-State at the time. I was torn between 6 or 7 wins for K-State on the season. I ended up going with 6 wins total, 6-4 on the season, 5-4 in Big 12 play. I absolutely could see a scenario where K-State wins 7 games and goes 6-3 in Big 12 play, but I just didn't know about that Texas game, so I ended up giving them the L. I ended up giving them the L on that last game, I guess, where you gave them the win, but I absolutely could see them getting a win there if Texas is out of it. It's cold. Texas doesn't want to be there. They're like, ugh, whatever, this season, I'm over it. You know, I mean, I absolutely could see that happening, but if Texas is playing for something coming into Manhattan that last week of the season,
it's going to be tough. Yeah.
You have trouble. So, I'll stick with 6-4, 5-4 in Big 12 play for K-State, but absolutely would not be surprised. I think it's more likely that they would finish 7-3 and 6-3 in Big 12 play than it would be the reverse of them finishing 5-5 and 4-5 in Big 12 play.
Yeah, so that Texas is going to be a wild card game, that's for sure. But yeah,
those last 4 games, Eddie. You know, the Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Baylor, Texas. I just kind of struggled thinking, well, what game will they win and lose? I mean, I think that whole last quarter could be a little wild card section for them.
Yeah. Yeah, but definitely go back, listen to that episode, and go back. If you missed out on any episodes of the Purple Project Podcast, Wildcat fans, go back, check it out, tell your friends about it. Game week is officially here in Manhattan, Saturday on FS1. So, and don't forget now, we will have plenty of reaction from that game and get you ready for Oklahoma on the next episode of the Purple Project Podcast. So we'll definitely break it down. And Alex, I kind of agree with what you're talking about there. I think, yeah, I'm pretty much on board with you on that. Yeah, I think K-State will find a groove in the second half and put Arkansas State away. It just kind of has that feeling. Arkansas State's already played a game, and K-State has not coming in here. So it's going to be interesting on Saturday. And, of course, yes, the 25% home advantage for K-State this year. The pandemic year, unfortunately, there. So it's going to be weird, obviously, sitting at home and watching it. But at least it's going to be on national television. So at least the first 2 games are. Usually K-State games, for those of you who usually go to the games out at the Bill Snyder Family Stadium, are on national television anyway. So FS1.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I would assume that all 10 of their games would be on national TV this year.
That's what I think also, yeah.
If you're missing 2 of the 5 Power 5 schools, I mean, you know, and people want to see football, wouldn't you just load up all the national channels with the Power 5 schools? I mean, I would assume that every game is going to be on national TV this year. But who knows? I could be wrong, you know, but maybe a game slides into ESPN Plus. But I just don't know how you don't put all the Big 12 games on national TV this year.
Yeah. With the Big 10 and Pac-12 falling out, yeah, I don't see a reason why to put all the Big 12 games on national television. So looking forward to the home opener for K-State on Saturday. And to wrap up the podcast, Thursday night, the NFL returns, and Alex is going to have the last words, but Houston Texans taking on the Super Bowl defending champs, the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead. NBC. Of course, this episode will come out Wednesday, and NFL opening night, Thursday night, the rematch of the divisional round where the Texans just coughed up a big lead, and Patrick Mahomes, the comeback Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes Super Bowl MVP and company, led the charge there. And so, obviously, again, the crowd is going to be a little different, but NFL is going to be back. Houston, Texas, Kansas City Chiefs. Man, if things go the way they are, looking forward to a lot of football. We already talked about BYU and Navy tomorrow night. Obviously, this episode will go out on Wednesday night, so we know what the score is there. Texas and Chiefs, Alex, last thoughts there. You pumped up for the Chiefs being back?
Oh, are you kidding me? What type of question is that, Eddie? Of course.
No, I should not ask you that.
I'm super pumped. I think the Chiefs are. I think that they. And I'm not saying this as a biased Chiefs fan, because I didn't think that they would, going into the playoffs last year. I didn't think that they were going to. I thought Baltimore was going to make the Super Bowl out of the AFC. I really didn't think the Chiefs would, and so that just proves my point that I'm about to make. So don't hate on me. I think the Chiefs have as good a shot as anybody to win the Super Bowl this year for a couple reasons. Now, I would take the field over the Chiefs. If somebody said, you want to put money on it, you know, what would you put money on, the Chiefs or the field? I put money on the field. I'm not stupid. But I do think that they have as good a shot as anybody because, number one, they've got nearly everybody coming back from that team last year. And during the coronavirus, when you've got everybody coming back, guys who have played together, that's just going to be so important. They have all their coaches coming back. They have all their players coming back. They got everything coming back. And having that continuity going into a season that's so wonky and so weird, where it's already going to be so hard for players to adjust, I think that puts the Chiefs, I think that just makes things just that. They have an advantage. They have a competitive advantage, in my opinion, because of that. Because I don't think any team is situated like that. And I already think that the Chiefs are possibly the most talented team in the NFL. And so then you throw in the fact that they had absolutely zero changes, and they'll just be able to kind of just pick back up where they left off. And then you throw in the fact that they have balls. And then you throw in the fact that they really don't have to play a road game this year, Eddie, because no fans. Patrick Mahomes is going to be able to communicate with his offense. He's not going to have to deal with a crowd or anything like that. So now you're just making the job even easier for the Chiefs offense throughout the season. So I think that that's going to benefit them as well. So I think that there's a lot of things that are really playing in the Chiefs' advantage because of this. And I think that they're in a good position to try to repeat. Now, will they repeat? That's to be determined. But I'm excited for the season to kick off. I do think that the Chiefs-Texans game will be a good game. Deshaun Watson, I love Deshaun Watson. I love his game. I think he's one of the best QBs in the NFL. Just watching him play is a lot of fun. So being able to watch him and Mahomes together on the field, it's a treat for an NFL fan, a treat for myself. I think it will be a good game. Houston's going to want revenge. They're going to want revenge for what happened. The issue that I think Houston may end up having is that this Chiefs team is really motivated to run it back. That's their slogan. They keep repeating over and over is run it back, run it back. They want to chase greatness. They really seem like they want to chase greatness, and they seem very motivated to do that. So I think the Chiefs will win. I do think it'll be a really good game. It might be a bit sloppy, Eddie, because there's no preseason, only 14 padded practices for the teams. So I don't think it'll be the prettiest football game, NFL game that we'll see this year. But I do think it will be entertaining. I think it'll be a good game. I think it'll be a close game. I think the Texans got a shot. You know, I'm picking the Chiefs to win. But would I be surprised if the Texans came out and got a win? No, I wouldn't. Nothing would surprise me in this year of COVID, Eddie, when it comes to sports. So mm-hmm. I'm just looking forward to seeing the game, and get football underway, and hopefully, we can, for my sake, you can see a Chiefs win. But and then just getting to see Patrick Mahomes again. I can't tell you, Eddie, how exciting it is just to see him. You just never know what he's going to do. You just never know what he's going to do. So you just sit there the whole time, and you think, oh my gosh, what's he going to do next? What's he going to do next? So to be able to spend 3 hours just getting to watch him, it's a treat. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yes, yes, so am I. So a lot of football on tap this week. That's going to put a close to the Purple Project Podcast this week with the Arkansas State preview. Alex, man, this is a really, really good episode. We'll talk definitely after the game at some point, whether it's Saturday night or Sunday, but we already talked about this, or we'll talk more. But Arkansas State, we'll talk more after the ball game.
Look, I look forward to our post-game breakdown, man. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, I hope it's a lot of fun. I hope we're not talking. I hope it's a fun combo. I hope it's not a bad one, because that's not going to be as fun. But I look forward to it. I can't wait to see the purple jerseys running out on the field and tuning into the game. Ella has a vet appointment an hour and a half before the game. So my goal is I need to get her to her vet appointment and back before the game starts. I'm relatively confident that I can do it, Eddie. I got an hour and a half. The vet's just down the street. I think I can pull it off. I really do.
Well, I hope we can pull it off. So, man, cannot wait for Saturday. I mean, college football is back officially. It is game week in Manhattan. Cannot wait for the game. FS1, 2:30 Central Time on FS1. Arkansas State Red Wolves, led by head coach Blake Anderson, 0-1 after losing to Memphis, taking on the K-State Wildcats, who this is their first game of the year. Chris Klieman begins his second season with the Wildcats. Alex will do it again after Arkansas State.
I look forward to it, man.
All right, that's going to put a close on the Purple Project Podcast this week. Again, I'll let the closing credits close us out. For Alex Aiden, Eddie Greer III, a couple of Wildcat 91.9 alums, and K-State graduates, this has been the Triple P, the Purple Project Podcast. Bring on the Cats! And we will talk to you after Arkansas State. But for now, Purple Project Podcast, we are out. We'll talk to you after season opener for K-State. Go, Cats! We out.
To you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.